Welcome to the podcast series for HAP Heart and Circulatory Physiology. I'm your host, Kara Hansel-Kehan. Today, we'll discuss the article by Moffray et al. Titled Progressive and Biphasic Cardiac Responses During Extreme Mountain Ultramarathon. This article published online February 26, 2016. Joining me today are Editor-in-Chief Irv Zucker, Lead Author Stefan Noten, and content expert Michael Joyner. Let's get started.
Thank you, Kara, and welcome, Stefan and Mike. As everybody knows, exercise is good for you, right? Well, in the case of severe exercise, this may not always be the case. And by severe exercise, I'm talking about interventions such as things like the Ironman, the decathlon, other types of long-distance racers. But perhaps the most grueling and strenuous challenge is the so-called mountain ultramarathon. The effects of this type of exercise on cardiac function are not well understood, and very few groups have undertaken the task of quantifying cardiac parameters during this type of really strenuous exercise. So, Stefan, can you tell us the motivation for carrying out this study, something about the methods and the protocols, as well as the most important findings?
Yes, thank you very much. Several years ago, we were in Italy for the Tour des Géants in the Aoste Valley. It's one of the most important ultra trail, mountain ultra trail in the Alps. And we came with an echocardiograph to evaluate cardiac function before the race, for example, the day before the race. And then at the middle of the race, about 160 kilometers, and then several hours after the race. And in this study, we used especially 2D strain echocardiography to evaluate cardiac regional function. It was very interesting to note that as opposed to race of shorter duration, we did not observe left ventricular dysfunction after this race. We were very surprised by our results because the cardiac function increased progressively during the race. And at the end of the race, both LV diastolic function and systolic function were improved. For example, it was not the case in a lower duration exercise such as a marathon or a Ironman triathlon.
Thank you very much, Stefan. So in this particular mountain ultramarathon, how does the exercise intensity differ from the previous races that you just alluded to?
It's an important question because if the race is longer, the exercise intensity is lower. In a mountain ultra marathon, the intensity is lower than during Ironman triathlon, for example. The intensity is lower because the participants run many and many hours. And for example, the speed of the race is about 3 to 4 kilometers.
That's great. Mike, one of the principal findings in this study was an increase in end-diastolic volume at the end of the study. You want to comment a little bit about what might be going on here, although the authors, and I'm sure Stefan can allude to some of the ideas he has.
Well, I think, Irv, one of the things that happens during these very, very long races is you could have changes in fluid volume because the athletes are quite cognizant of actually making sure they stay well hydrated over the course of the race. And unlike a lot of races where people actually lose quite a bit of weight, in these sorts of races, when people really pay attention to their fluids, they actually sometimes gain a bit of weight or at least stay parallel. And I think one other thing that's really important to recognize here, Irv, to amplify what Stefan said and really to pay tribute to the group that collected this data, is that physiology, as you know, has a long history of expedition-led investigation, whether it's at high altitude, in the desert, and other places. And this paper really follows in that wonderful tradition.
Right. So, Stefan, let's talk about the issue of plasma volume contributing to the increase in end-diastolic volume. Do you think this is a, as Mike just alluded to, a hydration issue, an intrinsic change in renal function, or some other change that modulates venous return?
Thank you. I will do the best because I'm not very specialized in blood parameters. But what I can say that these results are very different from shorter duration races. And I think perhaps the main parameters that change after such very long duration race is blood volume and plasma volume. Several years ago, we were in another mountain ultramarathon in the Alps. It's Le Tour du Mont Blanc. It's 160 kilometers. And we used a specific method to evaluate blood volume and plasma volume. It was a method based on carbon monoxide rebreathing. And we observed, for example, 20% increase in plasma volume and 12% increase in blood volume. And my opinion is that this increase in blood volume and plasma volume probably explain in large part the increase in gastric function after such races. Now, what are the underlying mechanism? We have just several hypotheses. Several years ago, we hypothesis that it could be due to increased inflammation during the race or increased plasma sodium retention, but it's only several hypotheses, and we have to date, to my knowledge, no strong conclusion regarding that.
Oh, that's very interesting. I didn't realize that you actually had measured plasma volume. Let me bring up another potential mechanism that maybe Mike can comment on, in that I wonder how much is mediated by a central movement of volume into the thorax as a result of progressive increases in sympathoexcitation of the venous capacitance vessels. Mike, you have any idea about this?
Irv, that's certainly an interesting thought, and the veins have become sort of the forgotten stepchild of the autonomic nervous system, and how they are regulated to control venous return is certainly an interesting question. But I would tend to agree with Stefan. I think you could have some sort of a long-term activation of sodium conservation at the level of the kidney. And as you know, there back in the 70s and 80s, there was a big controversy about whether renal mechanisms drove the increase in plasma volume with exercise, or there was a washout of interstitial proteins into the plasma space. That latter idea was championed by Leo Sine at St. Louis U. And that could be consistent with what Stefan says about the inflammation or perhaps some other osmotic, the active substance, protein, or whatever, drifting into the circulation over the course of this very prolonged race.
I wonder, Mike, you can chime in whenever you want, but I wonder if it's feasible to do some Doppler imaging of the kidney at different parts of this race.
Irv, that would be one idea, but probably that might change pretty quickly during rest. I think the other interesting thing would be just to make some measurements of AVP and other renal sodium-conserving hormones, and then also perhaps get some urinary measures as things move along, and even some blood draws to look at as osmolarity and osmolality. Those could perhaps be done in a subsequent study. But again, I think the group that did the study, the team that did the study, should be commended, because this was not logistically easy to take an echo machine all over these trails and in various places. It must have been very challenging to get the participants who are elite ultramarathoners to agree to participate. To do it over the course of really several days is quite impressive.
I completely agree, Mike. It's a real so-called tour de force to bring this study to completion. One last question, Stefan. I noticed that your population, the age range was quite substantial, from relatively young, fit people to people in their 60s. Was there any correlation in the changes that you saw with age?
We did not evaluate correlation between our results and on age, but in a previous study in a Ironman triathlon, we evaluated the effect of age, and this study is now submitted for publication. And we observed that in age people, for example, about 60 years old, the exercise-induced cardiac fatigue was lower in young subjects, especially on diastolic function. But maybe it's due to the decreased diastolic function in old participants.
Yes, it certainly complicates things when you start involving all of the mechanisms that are participating in cardiovascular function with aging. Well, I think this has been a very interesting discussion. Stefan, what is your next step? Are there any other great challenges?
Yes, the next steps is a specific studies on rats, because we would like to know if which underlying mechanisms are responsible for the exercise-induced cardiac fatigue, and the repetition of such races during the life on, for example, cardiac fibrosis, and especially cardiac fibrosis in the right ventricle and arrhythmias.
Great. Thank you, Stefan, and thank you, Mike, for your commentary. I think this has been a very interesting discussion, an important area, and we'll look forward to the next edition in the RAT studies. Kara?
You've been listening to an AJP Heart and Circ podcast. For more podcasts, visit us online at ajpheart.physiology.org. Thank you.